Y'all better put him in the Heisman.
Got that wood right here, baby.
This is the Bud Light Seltzer Morning Rush Podcast. Bud Light Seltzer for those anytime easy drinking occasions.
They're going to run and get that boot.
The Arkansas Razorbacks have completed the dream season.
A baseball team is going to bring back a College World Series title to Bob Stadium.
I almost got fired because I went Willie the Boss after I had a little too much sauce.
This is the Bud Light Seltzer Morning Rush Podcast.
So it's a Wednesday here on the Morning Rush, a What's Your Beef Wednesday, and we've gone through 2 days of sports radio on this program without mentioning that the coaches are back with the players up at the U of A. The football team is back practicing, and that's something that we are definitely going to dive into this morning. How much can the Arkansas coaches take advantage of the time allotted to them in the next couple weeks? Can Ken O'Briles and Felipe Franks get on track? Can Barry Odom get some chemistry with his linebackers, his secondary, his defense? Can there be improvement in the small time that you have between now and the beginning of football season for Arkansas? It begins on September 5th against the Nevada Wolfpack. Can you take advantage of this period that's been given to you? While it's not what you're used to as coaches, it's what you've been getting, and you got to deal with it. Coaches back. Hadn't mentioned it yet, really. Hadn't gotten into it, but it's definitely created some excitement, created some buzz, and going to create some conversation this morning.
You know, let me kind of rephrase the way you said it. You know, can they take advantage and get things on track? Can they make up for lost time? I think that's what these next couple of weeks are, that started on Monday with coaches being able to be on the field. Now, these aren't full-blown practices. These aren't teams, going through full-scale workouts, but the question for me is, can you make up for what you missed with spring practice? That's what these were designed for. That's why the NCAA granted you these extra weeks of time between coaches and players. That's what it's about. Can you make up for lost time? Because that's what you need it for. And particularly when you're in a situation like a few schools, including Arkansas, where you're in a transition, players and coaches have spent virtually no time together on a field at all, and what can you accomplish in a short amount of time? Because that's the challenge for the coordinators and the head coach to put it on Zoom here, man. I mean, and I don't mean the software. I don't mean the virtual software. I mean, can you put it on Zoom and go and accelerate the learning? Accelerate the progress.
You got to be on the fast track if you're Sam Pittman, Barry Odom, and Ken O'Briles, because you didn't make it up in this spring with no spring practice. Your new coaches, not only the head coach, but the two coordinators as well. And this is, you have some players from last year. You have some players that he brought in and stuff. It's just a learning process that this team's going to have to go through. Sam Pittman's still feeling out how he's going to be a head coach. He is yet to coach as the head coach of any Division I football game. Now, Ken O'Briles, Barry Odom, they have some background in that. Ken O'Briles is an OC for several years. Barry Odom even has the head coaching level type of game resume that he can put in his background, that he can help Coach Pittman out with what he wants help with, and then he'll even be with how he wants to go about it. But that's something just to keep an eye on as well. And it's just going to, as Tommy said, the Zoom, the fast track, flashing as much and getting as much in as you can in this time period. I'm under the impression, because you didn't have spring practice and because of just everything that's been going on with coronavirus and stuff leading up to this football season, that the playbook from not only the offensive side but the defensive side is going to be a little more compact, a little tighter than you may have seen if you had a full offseason to get ready for 2020. But you can't expect the players, even if you were doing it on Zoom, even if you were, even if they were really working diligently and stuff in the summer, they haven't been able to really get on the field and practice any of this stuff. So it would lead me to believe, again, that the offense and defensive playbook is going to be not as diverse as it may have been if you had a full offseason. I don't know how it could be at this point.
I got this vision in my head of Sam Pittman and Ken O'Briles just tearing pages out of the playbook. I mean, we can't do that one. You can't do that one. I mean, just like whole sections, whole chapters of the playbook gone. I mean, and that's what these next few weeks, whatever month, and again, we're working under the assumption that a season is going to happen and start on time. As the reality is, it probably will happen, but not on time. I mean, That's probably the most likely scenario. Would you agree, or do you have a different thought?
That'll happen. It won't be on time. I mean, if it seems like we've already had the Big Ten, we've already had the Pac-12 announce that they're going to conference only. In my opinion, I think it's only a matter of time before the SEC goes to that model. Now, whether it's 8, whether it's 10, whether they cycle in some more games, that's kind of up in the air at this point. I know Paul Feinbaum said on his program yesterday that the conferences that have yet to announce it are waiting on a miracle that they can hopefully get some non-conference games in. But if that was the case, Tommy, then September 5th is a non-conference game against Nevada, followed by a non-conference game on the road against Notre Dame. I would just assume that those wouldn't happen. Your first game would be Mississippi State, which is, I believe, September the 19th.
Yeah, so I think the season is going to happen at some point, but just probably not September 5th. So I don't know how you would alter practice schedules and if you just allow teams to continue to work, even though the games were pushed back. But, you know, at this point, assuming September 5th is still the deadline to be ready, you know, there's your first one. You're paring this thing down. You know, I think this you're trying to figure out, all right, this is what we can be good at. That's where you're at right now, really, on all phases of the game. Hey, here's what we can mesh together between the line, the quarterbacks, the skill players. This is what we think we can be good at. That's what you got to arrive at in the next few weeks, is knowing what your strengths are. And that's what Kendall Briles and the coaching staff have to figure out on offense and probably on defense as well. Hey, what are we good at? And try to play to your strengths.
And we mentioned this previously. The bar has been set low on both ends of the football, whether it's offense, whether it's defense, whether it's having the worst scoring defense in the Power 5 last year, whether it's having a putrid offense this past season. Barry Odom and Kendall Briles are coming in with the expectation is, hey, it can't get much worse, or if worse at all, than it did last year. It's a very low bar that's been set that they've come in and are trying to get ready for this upcoming season. And that could be a good and a bad thing. The bad thing is the expectation is you're not going to be much better than you were last year. But the good thing is, even if you put up marginal numbers, it's still going to blow the doors off of the statistics and the games that you put together last season, which is, I think, important. You look at the dynamic between Felipe Franks and Kendall Briles. Kendall Briles having the success with De'Ara Keene, with Bryce Petty, with Seth Russell, with a bunch of other quarterbacks. I wish I could say RG3, but he was just he was a wide receiver coach at the time when RG3 won the Heisman Trophy. But he's got a background that hopefully will be successful. And let's not forget, Felipe Franks played under Dan Mullen, who, by the way, was the QB guru for Dak Prescott and Tim Tebow, two guys that were unbelievable in college. Dak having a pretty decent, successful NFL career right now as well. So he's got not only his current offensive coordinator and quarterback coach in Kendall Briles, he's also got someone in his past in Dan Mullen that has a massive repertoire of guys in his past that he's had success with. So you hope that it bleeds over from Florida. You hope that he takes over for what Dan Mullen was able to do, and you also hope that Kendall Briles will get him going as well this what's going to be potentially his last season here at Arkansas.
Yeah, so I just think it's interesting to see and what we learn about the approach that the coaches take. Obviously, this is practice light, what we're doing the next couple of weeks, and we'll just see. I wonder if the news and the information changes the way they even approach practice these next couple of weeks. That will be another interesting thing to watch as we move along.
And unfortunately, because of everything going on, we as media members will not get to really see anything. I don't know how long it's going to be before a media member gets to watch any of practice.
You're listening to the Bud Light Seltzer Morning Rush Podcast. Try the new Bud Light Lemonade, a premium light lager brewed with real lemonade.
Oh, he does a tightrope act. Boy, Houdini's in the house, wearing number 3, and nobody's home to watch that house. Touchdown, Hogs! Holy Hog!
PA, I was going to get to this quick hitting headline, but I'll let you take it over. Tommy Tuberville, former Auburn, former Cincinnati, former Texas Tech head coach. He's got himself a Senate seat, PA.
Yeah, I want to go back even further than that. When he graduated from Southern Arkansas University, he immediately went to a little town northeast of Arkansas called Hermitage High School, and he coached football and basketball there from 77 through 79 because the football coach had to coach basketball, too, back in those days because of limited budgets. Anyway, that was back when I was in high school at Stevens High School, and they were in our district. Well, we didn't have a football team, but we had a basketball team, and I was a starting two guard. And I own a 5-0 record against Tommy Tuberville in basketball.
That's a cool story.
It's one of the things that I'm most proud of, except for one other thing, is at the Lafayette County Fair in 1986, they had a three-point shooting contest. You had to put a dollar up. And as soon as you missed, you had to put another dollar up. Well, my wife and I said, look, baby, I've got to try this. You know, I was just in high school like 8 years before. So I was a shooting guard. I said, I got to try this. So I put up a dollar, missed my very first shot. She's grabbing on my shoulder, and it's time to go. So I put up another dollar. I'm going to try one more time. And I proceeded to hit 28 in a row. And I still own the record for the Lafayette County Fair at Stamps, Arkansas, for the number of 3 points in a row. They had a legitimate goal. It was one of those hard, you know, smaller goals or
wasn't that around
you know, tight rims. You know, it's just a regular goal, and you had to obviously had it marked off, and if you stepped over the line, it didn't count. But 28 in a row. So I am willing, at my advanced age of 60 years old, to take you on in a shooting contest when I get to Fayetteville.
Wow.
P-A-I.
Calling you out.
Any amount of money.
Wow.
Any amount.
Man.
Are you in for that?
P-A-I. I don't have the financial backing that you probably do. As our PA, are you retired?
No, I've got a six pack of beer. I'm willing to do that and to show you. Well, I bet you're a good shooter, though. I can just tell by the way you talk, you're a pretty good shooter. And I played against U.S. Reed.
Sounds like put up or shut up for Ty.
Greg Stallman in the finals of the state tournament in 77. We beat Ozark. Stevens beat Ozark in 77. We had Greg Stallman on that team, the former Razorback. Right. And he was 6'8". Our tallest guy was 6'1".
So what are you going to do, Ty?
I'm in.
Are you going to take on the Lafayette County champion?
I will say that I think the most PA I've hit in a row is 19, so you got me edged there. But
That's pretty good.
Have you won any county fairs in your time?
I won, so two notes on that, PA. So when I went to Kansas City, there's what's called the College Basketball Experience, where the College Basketball Hall of Fame, and they had a three-point contest. And I at the time, I hit the most. I hit 11, and that was the most. They gave me a free ticket to get back in, which I ended up using that next day. And then I hit, when I went to Minnesota to watch Minnesota-Ohio State, they had a contest out there, and I won a free T-shirt. I don't remember how many shots I hit from three-point line, but those are the two contests I participated in or won something. I don't know if that was the best, but I at least won something to a certain extent.
Right. Well, to make the starting team in Stevens, that sounds good. To make the starting team in Stevens, you had, it wasn't because of my defensive ability. I couldn't break anybody. I mean, as far as being able to beat somebody off the bounce or get down and play rock-solid hard defense and get your face without getting blown by. I wasn't that guy. I was that guy that could make it from 22 feet, 18 feet. If I was left alone, and most of the time I was left alone because, hey, we had four other guys that could take it to the rim anytime. And I just found my niche. And I could tell you were a good shooter because I could tell a guy that's confident in what he's doing. And you sound like you're very confident in shooting.
He's confident in a lot of things.
Let's get together and do this thing.
PA, I am all in. I appreciate the call this morning. I appreciate the
And PA, he won't want a six-pack of beer. He'll want a six-pack of some seltzer. You won't have to buy a six-pack of beer. It'll be a six-pack of some, you know, fruity Truly's, or it'll be White Claw's. So you won't have to buy actual...
What about Bud Light Seltzer?
PA, you won't have to buy actual beer. It will be, you know, White Claw's or something. So don't worry about it.
I drink beer, too. Just I'm trying to lose weight, so seltzers are the better path. But PA, I will accept your challenge. Will I beat you? I don't know. I think it'll be fun. I think it'll look really bad, since if you're 60-something years old and I'm 25, you beat me if 35 years plus on me, or whatever the age group is.
It'll look bad for you?
No, it'll look really bad for me. But yeah, I happily accept the challenge, and I appreciate the comments. Yeah. That is the one thing on the basketball court that I can do okay is shoot. Anything else, not that good. So,
you know, he started the conversation. He's 5-0. He's got a 5-0 lifetime record against Tuberville going back to his playing days in high school. That's a neat story that PA said. I want to clear, Tuberville didn't actually win the Senate seat last night. He won the primary, right? He beat Jeff Sessions. He won the Republican. I just want to clear that up. He didn't actually win the Senate seat. He won the Republican primary. He still got to win the seat in the November general. So,
do you think there's going to be Alabama fans within that state that have voted red their entire life and decide all of a sudden vote blue because the former Auburn head coaches?
That's an interesting question.
So that's that'll be something interesting to watch. And again, that shows you my info and up-to-dateness on politics, the fact that I just assumed he won. I kept seeing
the GOP nomination.
Yeah, so that he beat out, and I know that Trump has backed him, so interesting to see that. But good call.
The interesting thing there, and not to get into, but we like to talk about rivalries and battles. Trump's former Attorney General, Jeff Sessions, was the one battling Tuberville. So the interesting thing was Trump backed Tommy Tuberville as he was taking on a former Attorney General of Trump's. So that was kind of the interesting twist to that plot.
JT in Hot Springs texts in. He says, I love PA. Ty starts backing down, and PA is just trying to find any way to make it happen. I wasn't backing down. I was trying to get in the conversation.
Crawfishing a little bit.
Was not backing down whatsoever. So you can take that for what it's worth. That did not happen. No, I think I'm going to lose. There's a good chance. We'll see. But I am down to participate. So Arkansas has started practice, and like other SEC teams, they have actually done, now not pads. We have to define.
Do they even have helmets?
Is. I don't know, but
are the ground rules?
You asking me?
Just in general. I'm just asking the oxygen in the room. You know, we haven't gotten. They just haven't released a lot of details.
They listed them out. So if you want to look them up, so they're. I think there's a little bit of film. You can look it up real quick. Jenkins, if you want to do that real quick, just to kind of detail what that is. But the offense, the defense this season, they're going to need this practice time in order to get ready for SEC football, which could be only SEC football if they don't have non-conference games this upcoming year. We've talked about how Barry Odom's got to get this thing on track on defense. Kendall Briles has got to revive that offense. And there's been rankings out there where Arkansas is going to be on defense, on offense. You saw that Michael Bratton of Saturday Down South had Arkansas with the second best pair of coordinators in this conference. Kendall Briles was at 6th in the offensive side. Barry Odom was at 4th. That launched them all the way up to second best in the SEC, which is a pretty big deal considering you have a first-time head coach and you want to make sure he has solidified staff around him to help him this upcoming season. And when you look at this offense, and we'll get into defense coming up, who was ranked 12th by Saturday Down South, and yes, they have some guys. Kendall Briles has some pieces. Let's not overlook that. I know there was an anonymous SEC coach that said that roster looks like it's been hit by sanctions. Well, you could say that about the offensive line. You can't really say that about the skill position players. Trey Knox, Treylon Burks, Rakeem Boyd, Felipe Franks, who's a New Year's Six Bowl quarterback. I mean, there are some pieces there. Do I think Felipe Franks is going to be a top quarterback in the SEC? Probably not.
But doesn't have to be, though.
It depends on what level of expectation you have for this offense. You do it.
Well,
you say he doesn't have to be, but if he isn't, and they're still, even if they perform a little more admirably than they did last season, then this team's not going to make that big of a step forward. When you say he doesn't have to be, you have to almost measure that compared to how many wins you want. Like, he doesn't have to be in order for them to get 4 or 5 wins. He just has to be good. But if you're talking bowl, yes, he has to be. He has to make up for the other inadequacies of this football team, whether it's the defense, whether it's the offensive line. you just want, and again, it comes back to what is your expectations for this team. If the expectation for this team is 4 to 5 wins, then you're exactly right. Franks didn't have to be. But if it's not that,
right.
If it's above that, then yes, he absolutely has to be a top 5 quarterback in this conference.
Okay, it depends on which measuring stick we're going to use. Are we working from the measuring stick of 12 games and there will be bowls? Are we working from the measuring stick there's going to be 8 games and no non-con? I mean, I totally have a different set of expectations in regards to bottom line number of wins based on the parameters here, and I think all of us do. If they end up playing 8 games and no non-con, I think this is going to be like the lost season. You know, I mean, I don't know what the expectations are from the fans. And let's just be honest. I mean, the reality is you might win 0 or 1 or 2. You know, 2 might be a real coup this year if you end up playing no non-conference games this year in 2020. I mean, who knows what fans are really going to expect in a season that could be very fluid as far as the number of games you actually play and who you're playing and all of these things. So to me, it's which measuring stick. I think it's just hard to have this, you know, this expectations type conversation and measuring wins right now. Franks, I think, has to be somewhere in the middle of the pack for this offense to have a chance to be what we would think to be approaching bowl eligible type. And I don't know that Arkansas is going to be able to get there, not necessarily because of the offense, but because of the defense.
I can't see like Felipe Franks taking this massive jump where he was a pretty good quarterback at Florida with those pieces around him with Dan Mullen. Is it fair to say Dan Mullen's a better quarterback coach and offensive coordinator than Kendall Briles?
Yeah, I mean, he's more proven. I mean, absolutely.
In what conference?
The SEC.
Exactly.
And has done it for decades.
I just don't, I can't envision a scenario where Felipe Franks takes even a bigger jump because he was a good quarterback, but there's a reason that Kyle Trask eventually took over and held that job and stuff, not only because he's coming off that injury, but I don't know. Like, I want this guy to succeed. I want this guy to be spectacular. 6'6", strong arm, has the tools. Sometimes you're like, wow, this guy's going to play on Sundays, and then other times you're like, what is he doing in this conference? That's his thing. It's inconsistency. So again, sometimes you're like, man, that's one of the best throws I've ever seen. The next play, the perfect example. Did you watch the Miami-Florida game? Was it last year or 2 years ago? I can't remember which one it was.
I'm not sure.
Did you watch that? You didn't watch that game?
All right, I may have.
So Franks like throws this like brilliant touchdown pass and stuff and starts talking to the camera. Like the camera comes over and he starts talking and he basically does this game's over or whatever. The following series, he throws a pick.
Mm-hmm.
That's like the perfect two like series scenario for Felipe Franks. You're wowed by him one series and you're blown away by the next, which is going to be irritating for Kendall Briles and some of the other offensive staff that he does spectacular things one series. The next series, you're like, what are you doing? So I can't see his consistency going through the roof in 1 year at Arkansas. That doesn't seem possible. It doesn't
seem
like
too big a leap for you.
Yeah, it's not. Or it is, exactly. Yeah. So I mean,
that's a maturity issue, what you're talking about there.
Yeah.
Because that's focus and concentration. When you're talking about you make a great play, you can't keep your head about you. You're so focused on, look at me, because I want to find a camera. I want the world to be focused on me. That's a maturity issue.
Yeah, but
can you grow out of that?
A lot of quarterbacks are like that. They just continue
but
to
a lot
have
aren't,
that.
You know?
I mean, the perfect juxtaposition of that is Ryan and Tyler. Ryan was more about the camera, Tyler wasn't, but they both had success. Like, you can have success by being cocky and arrogant. You have to be in the quarterback position, but if you're going to be that, you have to be able to back it up. And looking at what Felipe Franks is going to have with him at Arkansas compared to what he had at Florida, I'd have to look like Tyree Cleveland, Kadarius Toney, like he had some pieces around him, some good, I'm forgetting the running back they had at Florida, that's a stud, but they had some good pieces, much better offensive line than Arkansas has. So, again, you're just kind of comparing, plus you're playing the SEC East compared to the West. The West is more difficult, better defenses. You're playing Alabama. You're playing LSU this year. Depending on what happens, Notre Dame, you got to play them. I can't, and I hope I'm wrong, as I've said about Arkansas's record. I hope I'm wrong about 4-8. I hope they're 5-7 or 6-7 or whatever. But I can't envision a scenario where this guy coming from Florida as a pretty good quarterback, but looked like he had a ceiling to a certain extent with inconsistencies in 1 year, unless he gets that medical hardship to play another, having just a massive year. And if you're talking about, as you mentioned, if if you're looking at the schedule this year, and if Arkansas was to play conference-only games and only get 8 in, or if they moved that to 10 and added 2 more SEC games, which I don't know how they do that, then you're looking at a team that's, again, going to go below 500. And pretty, like, if you don't, is it fair for me to say, if Felipe Franks is not a top 5 or 6 SEC quarterback, this team has no shot at a bowl? Is that fair?
Yeah, I think so.
Okay. So on that note, again, it goes back to the expectations you have for this football team. If you think Felipe Franks is going to be a top 5 or 6 SEC quarterback, then this team probably actually has a shot at a bowl game. If he's outside of that, which I think both Tommy and I think, then they have no shot.
Well, but I think he could still be a mid-level in this conference quarterback, because I think he's got the weapons around him to be there. I think there's enough wide. But, dude, there's still another side of the ball. There's still the defense that, do you trust that they're going to hold up their end of the bargain? Or do you see some games Arkansas with good quarterback play and an offense that could roll up some points could still lose some dadgum ball games 45-42 or 38-35 or whatever because the quarterback played well? Hey, your quarterback threw for 5 touchdowns today and your defense gave it up. So, I mean, it's a little bit unfair to sit here and say your quarterback – it's all on the quarterback, because we know that this defense has been horrible for multiple seasons now. So, yes, the quarterback has to play well, but there's 13 other schools in this league that's the same conversation. And quarterback play is always directly tied to the bottom line. I mean, that's just the way it's always going to be, unless you have a Heisman Trophy candidate at running back somehow, or a wide receiver that is just a standout with blazing speed and long arms and a generational talent or something.
But you're talking about the defense not being as good, which we are both in the same camp on that. It's not going to be good, even if there's improvement, which we can talk about with Barry Odom. It's still not going to be enough where I think it makes a difference where the defense is winning you football games. That being said, you're feeding right into my point. That means Felipe Franks has to be even better than the expectations. So if the defense is here and the offense is here, then the offense has to rise to here. The only way you're going to do that is if Felipe rises to here. And he's not, again,
it's going to be hard. I mean, in a year where I think the product's going to be off everywhere, and starting with Alabama, can Alabama be as good as Alabama normally is? No. I just think the product in the NFL, college football, the NBA, we're going to see it. Sports product this year is just not going to be as good, right? Anywhere. So, I mean, I just think we have to all be braced, whether it's at Arkansas or anywhere else, that what we see on the field is not going to be as good as what we've seen in previous seasons.
Starting on Monday, Jenkins just looked this up. Players can participate in 8 hours of weight training, conditioning, and film review per week, and then no more than 2 hours of film review per week. So that's, and then with coaches, that's the addition. And you mentioned just kind of the expectation for not just college football, NFL, and whatever other sport. I think if you temper, like, if Alabama is typically, Tommy, a 9.9 in football out of 10 or whatever, and you and Arkansas this past season was like a 1.4 or whatever, maybe that's a little low, but all you do is just bring that down. Alabama might move to an 8.7. Arkansas is going to move down to a 1.0. You hope they go up, but all that is the better teams are still going to be really good. Mm-hmm. The lesser teams are still going to suck. They're going to just be even worse. So, but the product on the field, there might be more miscues, there might be more penalties, there might be more just missed opportunities, misplays on both offensive and defensive, but if you look at the levels of where the good, really good teams are to compare to the really bad teams all, it's just going to move down and probably, and I would even say that the worst teams that are terrible are going to be more drastically affected than the really good teams. Like there's going to be more effect on the really bottom-tiered, lower-tier SEC teams or really just any team in college football than there is with the really, really top dogs, Clemson, Alabama, Ohio State, or whatever. So there might even be more of a gap between those teams.
And, you know, and maybe this is just putting on your rose-colored glasses at Arkansas, but how much do you believe Arkansas had some talent? You know, when you look at Burks, you look at Knox, you know, and now you got Franks that you add to the mix that wasn't here last year. You got Rakeem Boyd back. Offensive line's a huge question mark. You miss coaching. You miss development. You know, now you add coaching into it, and you know, maybe that 1 point whatever you said can become a 2.9 or 3.0. Maybe you can close that gap a little bit. I'm not a I guess my expectations are a little more tempered this year just based on everything that's going on. Just throwing in the global environment of what all is going on and the lack of development, the lack of practice time, the lack of investment of time to develop the product. Maybe my expectations of what the product is going to look like is a little more tempered.
All right, let me ask you this. Do you expect me to be a lesser radio host because we don't have sports? Do you expect this show to take a dive because we haven't had sports?
No, because we're actually allowed to do our job and put in time to prepare the show and actually do the show. These coaches and these players have not been allowed to be in the weight room. They've not been allowed to be in meeting rooms. They've not been allowed to meet together. I mean, if we weren't allowed to get on a computer, we weren't allowed to be in a studio, we weren't allowed... I mean, we're at least allowed to get on the internet. We're allowed to meet here in the studio. We're allowed to use the microphones.
But we hadn't had sports.
But we're still allowed to do the things that we need to do to do our job. Not having sports is no reason that we can't talk and do a job and sit here in the studio and entertain an audience and inform an audience for 3 hours.
My point is the whole point of sports radio is to discuss sports, and not only sports but live sports. We haven't had that, so we in a sense have we been challenged, have we had to
dig deeper, have we had to work harder? Yes, but this goes a step further. Now imagine this, Ty, to your point. Imagine if we weren't allowed to use the internet the last 4 months. Imagine if we weren't allowed to use the studio. But we still have to do a show.
Because
that's what these coaches and players have been dealing with. They haven't been allowed until recent weeks to even use the... I mean, they had to work out on their own. Find your own place to work out until June, whatever it was.
But that's everyone else in college football.
I'm not talking about just Arkansas's product's going to be off. I'm talking about from the NFL down, it's going to be different this year.
I get frustrated when people specifically talk, and hopefully there hadn't been as much conversation, but people specifically talk about the level for Arkansas this year should be lowered based on what's going on. No, it shouldn't. Everyone else in college football is doing this. And you're saying everyone, but people have said, oh, lower the expectations on Arkansas, but it's not just happening to Arkansas.
This is former Razorback kicker Zach Hocker. You're listening to The Morning Rush.
Welcome back into The Morning Rush. Let's go to the phone lines and welcome in one of the deadliest kickers in the history of Razorback football with a career 77 field goal percent. Zach Hocker now joins us on The Morning Rush. Zach, thanks for making some time for us this morning, man.
Absolutely. Thank you, guys. I appreciate you guys having me on.
So, Zach, we had Drew Morgan on a couple weeks ago, and we talked with him. He looked like he was headed to A-State at one point, which is where you were going initially as well. Take us back to the events leading up to National Signing Day, you getting the offer and ending up in Fayetteville.
Yeah. Well, that was a really wild time, and at the end of the day, I'm very thankful that I got to play at Arkansas, but also very thankful for Arkansas State that they trusted me and gave me a scholarship offer pretty early. And so I was committed to play at Arkansas State, and leading up to signing day, it was always in the back of my mind that I wanted to be a Hog, and I got an offer essentially the day of signing day from Arkansas, and I'd let them know that if they had a spot for me, I was definitely coming, and they made a spot for me, and there's no looking back after that. Right before signing day, I'd gotten an offer from the University of Hawaii, of all places. I had never talked to them before. It was a really random deal, but if I was going to be able to go and visit Hawaii and at least go check it out and meet the staff, I was going to do that. And that was just maybe 5 days before signing day, and ended up going out there for right at a week and meeting the staff. Ultimately, did not take the offer. You know, at this point, the Arkansas deal wasn't on the table. And I walked out of there, and I had the best time ever, and didn't really know if I was going to regret that decision or not by not taking that that opportunity. But I was on a red-eye flight back to California, and when I landed, I had a voicemail from Arkansas saying they were going to offer me, and I flew right into Arkansas and went to my high school and signed away, and that was it. But pretty crazy story.
How did Hawaii find out about a kicker in Russellville, Arkansas? That's got to be an interesting story.
I have no clue. You know, I would do these camps where I would go around and I would kick, and maybe catch them all of, you know, all over the country there trying to showcase and try to get offers, but I had never talked to them ever. And so it was definitely a cold call, and you know, I had no idea what to expect, but they wanted to bring me out there and they ended up offering me. And they told me the second that I walked out of those doors, they were going to offer a kid out of LA. And so, you know, there's kind of some pressure there for me to make a decision. And I did. I loved the coaching staff and I loved everybody there, but it was just, you know, it was a gut feeling of mine that I needed to, I needed to hold off and come back home. And you know, thankfully I had an offer from Arkansas on the table when I got back home. So it all worked out, but very thankful to be back in Arkansas.
Zach, you come in and as a true freshman, you start, and I know that Alex Tejada was there and some other guys, but how nerve wracking was it as a true freshman to start? And man, were you a little surprised that you started that early in your career at Arkansas?
Yeah, you know, like I said, I'm very thankful that I had the opportunity to play as a freshman. It was pretty nerve wracking. I heard before the intro this morning on the radio, one of my interviews from a long time ago when I was playing, and I think I mentioned something around, you know, along the lines of playing in front of 70,000 people, and it was definitely a little bit of a culture shock going from Russellville to Arkansas, you know, within a year's time there and being able to play. But you know, we had a great team at that time and great guys around me to help us have a pretty successful freshman year. So it was nerve wracking, but I had all the confidence in my other guys and it was definitely a fun year for sure.
How much of it is leg mechanic or just mechanics, leg strength, and then how much of it's mental?
I would say 99% of it's mental. You know, there are a lot of players out there that can, they have the talent, you know, and it's just it's being able to get over that mental hump and zone everything out and just be locked in that moment. But I will say that's not very tough to do when you're out there and the adrenaline is pumping out of your chest. And like I said, you just kind of black out there, you know, and you walk in. It is kind of tough to take in the bright lights and see all the people whenever, you know, you have a goal in mind here and you know, you've got the next 30 seconds to get it done. But as far as being able to bounce back from a miss or just kind of get over mental adversity to come back and still be an asset for your team is definitely tough to do. And, you know, I admire the guys who have great college careers and are able to play in the NFL for, you know, 10 plus years, because those are the guys who are really special and can truly block out the noise on, you know, at any given time and be able to come back and still make big kicks for their team.
Yeah, it's kind of like a quarterback throwing a pick or particularly a pick six. You got to block it out. Who are the bigger head cases, kickers or quarterbacks on the team?
Well, I wish I could put myself in a quarterback shoes, but I definitely can't. But I can speak on behalf of the kickers, and I can say even myself, you know, there during my NFL career, there, you know, I was bouncing around from team to team, and when I did finally make a team, you know, I was still feeling like I was going to keep on bouncing around, and I still hadn't fully made it yet. And so for me, I was a head case because I knew there were. There's a long line of guys waiting to take my spot as soon as I messed up, right? And that was definitely on me to not have that. You know, I did not need to have that mindset, but that was a tough hurdle for me to get over when I was bouncing around. But I would say, you know, I'm not going to put kickers in front of quarterbacks by any means, but it is easy to get in your head and to get into a slump. And everybody wants to compare it to golf. And you just got to. If you have a shank, you got to come back that very next one and keep your head down and stay focused and get it done.
We're speaking with former Razorback kicker Zach Hawker here on The Morning Rush. Zach, when you were in school, whether it was Dennis Johnson, whether it's Joe Adams, whether it's you, there was a heavy emphasis on special teams and the talent that you guys had. you were accurate as it gets. I know you had that little junior year blimp where you weren't as accurate as you were the other years. But, I mean, there was just an emphasis on special teams while you were in school. How important were the coaches that you had, particularly in John L. Smith, helping the special teams get to where it was?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, number one, you're right. You listed a couple of names there. We had a lot of fun guys to watch on the special teams unit. I know the other day, Joe's punt return resurfaced, I think, on social media, and it was cool to go back in that moment to watch him do that. But John L. He absolutely did play a huge role in our success. And the way I tell people about John L., he was the breath of fresh air whenever times were tough on the field or you were in a weird situation, you had to go execute a play or a kick or something like that. And obviously Bobby was pretty high strung and wanted us to do well, but he also kept you on your toes playing and would put the situation in perspective for you pretty quick. And John L. was just kind of the happy medium of approaching us, joking around to kind of bring it back down to normal level, get us focused again, and let us know that he trusted us before we went out there and took the field. So it was definitely a fun balance of staying focused and knowing that we had to get our job done here, but also have fun, go out there. You can do this. You've done it before. Go make a play. So that. I definitely enjoyed him as our special teams coordinator for sure, and I think most guys on the team who played with me at that time would definitely agree with that.
Zach, do you have a favorite John L. Smith story?
Oh man, I've got a lot of them. Let me think here. Well, I don't know how many I can tell on the radio, but his. His commentary and his demeanor amongst all the guys, he was just, I mean, he was a really fun coach to be around all the time. He was joking around with us and you could tell that he truly cared about his guys, but no, there's a long list of John L. stories that I'll keep in the books today.
Zach, but John L. had the title of special teams coordinator. Arkansas had many teams that didn't have a special teams coordinator. A couple of years ago, they added the 10th assistant, didn't have one immediately. Now, Sam Pittman has added a role of a special teams coordinator and has that with Scott Fountain. How important is that? And as someone that spent a career as a specialist, what do you think having a coach dedicated to coordinating special teams brings and give the audience some perspective on the value of that, particularly as a specialist, having someone that kind of puts their arms around special teams, how that can lift that third of the team?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that is really crucial. I know a lot of teams go the route of assigning position coaches to certain tasks within special teams, I guess, whether it be the punt return guy or the punt team guy or the kickoff guy. I've had it both ways. I will say that I definitely do think that it's more, it's way better having a guy strictly designated to the entire unit. Just because to your point, you have a guy who is truly dedicated to the special teams unit. And I feel like sometimes special teams is overlooked. But when you do have a coach, who's the head honcho there and over the entire unit, it does bring some sort of unity and camaraderie there amongst the guys who may not be, a huge asset on strictly the offensive side or a huge asset on the defensive side. But they're part of our unit, and when you have a coach really breaking down players instilling the importance of what we have to do in that moment, I feel like is pretty crucial. And you know how dedicated they are at that time and making us successful. And you only have typically special teams one play to go out and make it happen. And it is refreshing to know that you have a coach who is emphasizing the importance of this one play and in this one moment, and a guy you can go back to at any moment to fix things or you know, to know that he has your best interest. So I feel like that it is, and I do like that setup way more than necessarily you know, I guess divvying out the jobs amongst the position coaches.
Ty was talking about Dennis Johnson. We remember Joe Adams' punt return. It seems like when Bobby was there, some of your more high-profile skill players, particularly in offense, were a part of special teams. Is that the key to Arkansas having special teams? Arkansas has never had tremendous team depth in a lot of places. For Arkansas to have great special teams, do you need to play some of your frontline players in the key spots consistently? I mean, what does Arkansas need to do? What's the key ingredient to having great special teams at Arkansas?
Well, I definitely think it's exactly what you said. You know, I'll never forget when we were, you know, and my, it is kind of sad, but a lot of guys who are big time players on either one side of the ball or the other, they don't want to be a part of special teams just because they are exerting a lot of effort and focus and energy other places. But it definitely does help when you have guys who are super talented step up and want to take a position on the special teams unit. And I'll never forget when we were playing Alabama, every year we would break down who their frontline guys are on kickoff team. And it'd be, you know, Trent Richardson, or it'd be, you know, like the big name guys that they had who are making a huge impact on one side of the ball or the other were also the starters on the special teams unit. And I feel like that wasn't coincidence of why they were so good at every phase of the game. And still are. So I truly believe that is crucial to have your talent and a lot of your frontline guys, whether it be offensive side or defense side of the ball, step up and want to take a spot on the special teams unit and go make it happen.
Zach Hawker with us here on the Morning Rush. Zach, you brought up Alabama. I want to go back to that game. You're a true freshman. It's 2010. Bama's coming to town. In that year, in that moment, did you experience a better atmosphere than Alabama in 2010?
Man, that was a really cool time to be a Razorback for sure. Because you know, we were on the up and up, and we were really pumped about that game. I don't think I've heard our stadium louder than that first wheel route that Mallon threw to Wingo and scored that touchdown. That was the loudest I think I've ever heard. Razorback Stadium, but really fun time to be on the team, and we were pretty close to sealing that one up. But as far as the atmosphere goes, that's definitely top of the list when it comes to games in Fayetteville for sure. It was a great time. The kids were out, you know, all the students would camp out before the game, and we'd go out the night before to show our support for them and hand out pizzas, and you could just feel the energy in Fayetteville everywhere before that game, and that definitely boosted us to go and try to do our best for him. But that was a really fun time for sure.
Zach, if you look at 2010, 2011, you guys lost to Alabama, you lost to Auburn, who went on to win the national championship. You also lost mm-hmm. to Ohio State, who was a BCS team at the time. And then you lost the following year, you lost to the two national championship competitors, Alabama and LSU. If you had to pick the year 2010 or 2011, which team do you feel like had the better shot of winning a national championship?
You know, 2010 was an eye-opening year for me because it was just my first year to play. But there's just something special about the 2010 team we all felt really good about. You know, we ended up playing in our first BCS game down in the Sugar Bowl. But it was really cool coming into 2011 for the most part, still maintaining a lot of our guys and a lot of our talent and just rolling that momentum over into the next season. And, you know, Tyler obviously taking over at quarterback. And man, I really don't know. Both seasons were we made a pretty good run at it. I will say because we did have such a great year in 2010, you know, our vision for being able to make a national championship became more real going into 2011 because we know that we could get there. So I would say that, 2010, we were a really, really good team, and there's something special about it. But just because I feel like we could fill it within an arm's reach in 2011, knowing that we already proven ourselves the year before that we are good enough to compete with these guys, I would say 2011 was probably, the year that we could see it happening in front of us. But both teams, talent-wise, I feel like did not outweigh one of the other. Both of them were great teams, and we both got to play in really cool bowl games against great teams, Kansas State and Ohio State. So really fun years for sure.
Were there any games where you got iced, where the other team was calling timeouts or maybe called multiple timeouts and you had to go to the sideline? Because I would love to know what Bobby's jokes were or what was the interaction, because he doesn't seem like a joking kind of guy. I'd love to know what was his way of relaxing you, because he didn't seem like he had a relaxing mode to him. Was there ever that moment? I can't remember a game offhand, but what was that like?
Yeah, there are a handful of times that I got iced, and I'll be honest with you, I think Bobby and I understood that if that situation ever did happen or if a kick was coming up, we did not talk. if we were going to give ourselves a chance to make this, it was going to be best that he do his thing.
He didn't bring the tension down, did he? He didn't have a way of calming things, did he?
Right. But if you went out and if you weren't successful or if the kick did not go in, you would definitely know about it. And you would just go ahead and be able to, Just mentally prepare for the gut check you're about to have on the sideline. But it's as far as prior to the kick, going out and having to execute something like that, we both had a mutual understanding that we were not going to talk before that. And that's how it was when I played, underneath them, whether it be, a pressured kick that we were getting iced at or just your average extra point. He and I, we didn't speak much during the games. Unless obviously he needed to get onto me for something,
exactly.
which was probably more so than it needed to be. But it is what it is.
Okay, so on that note, Zach, 2010, yeah. You're a true freshman on the road in Starkville, one of the most intimidating atmospheres that you can go into. What did he say after overtime in that game? Do you remember?
That was a man. You're bringing it back up, and that was definitely an eye-opening game for me. And when I missed that kick in overtime, I will say Bobby was definitely upset and gave me a few words. I can't really remember what the words were. they probably weren't anything that we could talk about today. Yeah.
Well, thanks for filtering them. We appreciate that here on live radio.
Yeah, absolutely. But I will say what was really cool about that, I'll never forget, Ryan came over and I was like, hey, man, I've got you on this deal. And I had a handful of the players come over and say, hey, this is going to be all right. I've got you. And sure enough, whether I wanted to believe in that moment or not, and I really was down on myself, the guys came out there and pulled it off. And I'm very thankful that they did. Because we had a good game going into that moment, and I was really confident. But that was my first true test of making a big kick in the SEC, and I learned from it, and we ended up moving forward. But thankful that we had a good team behind us that could go out and still get it done.
Zach, let me top off the interview with this, man. We played your intro; it's got you voicing and obviously saying you're listening to the Morning Rush. But that was you playing guitar on the road in about a minute or less. You still playing guitar a little bit, just here and there?
Man, I'm playing a little bit. During the quarantine phase that we're all in right now, you have a little bit of downtime. So I am still playing a little bit. Probably not as much as I'd like to, but. And that's definitely a hobby that I do enjoy, and I'm not going to say that I'm any good at it, but I do enjoy it, kind of like my golf game. I'm not any good, but I am there to have fun doing it. So
Just a good excuse to drink beer.
That's exactly right. Exactly right.
Just like golf, a good excuse to drink beer.
No doubt about it.
Solid label.
You can't lose golf balls playing the guitar.
That's right. That's right. Yeah, golf is a little bit more expensive than playing a wrong note. So,
Former Razorback kicker Zach Hawker with some good stories this morning. Zach, we really appreciate you making some time for us on the Morning Rush, man.
You got it, guys. Thank you so much for having me on. You guys have a good day.
All right, thanks.
You too, man. Great stuff from Zach.
Your number one source of local news and information you need.
Bud Light Seltzer, 5% ABV and only 100 calories. We'd put it up against any other seltzer out there.